To the other kids at St. Bernard Academy, they were the girls who didn't belong.
Whatever you do, stay away from them.
Why?
They're witches.
Everybody, welcome to Into the Dark, the show that takes you to every witchy where and when you've ever wondered about. We've got so much show for you today, we don't even have time for the theme music, which I find mildly depressing. But we've got a lot going on. I've got my interview with Karen Crisis on today. She talks to the dead. She'll talk to us. We'll also answer one of your listener questions. But I have an important announcement to make. We're coming up on a new season of shows here at Into the Dark, starting in November. A lot of shows that you like are coming back. A lot of new shows are joining the team. And some shows have been asked, or for whatever reason, are going to be stepping back. They don't want to do it anymore, maybe they've been pushed out. And I just want to let you all know that I appreciate the support you've given the show and all the listens you've been giving us. And I also just want to let you guys know that we've been renewed. We're coming back for a whole new season of fun, magic-y, witchy, witchcrafty stuff. And it's all, and it's, thank you so much for listening. Come join us in season four. It's going to be sick. I'm already lining up fun, sexy interviews. And also, we've got, apropos of that, somebody in the studio today. Eric is going to be doing a new show on Radio Free Brooklyn, starting the new season. Hey, Eric.
Hey, Cooper. How's it going?
Great. So tell us about the show. What's it called? When's it going to be on? Give us the skinny and the scoop.
Sure. Well, first, I should say that I'm very very happy. Sorry, I'm out of breath. Very happy to join the Radio Free Brooklyn family and and thank them very much for giving me the opportunity to do a show. Now, they suck. No. My show is going to be called Pull Request. It's an hour-long technology talk show right here in the heart of Brooklyn. And we're not going to do call-in tech support. We're not going to take calls from your mom about why iCloud isn't backing up. It's going to be a real deep dive into geek topics. And like, if you're one of those people who uses Sublime Text on the L train, this is the show for you to listen to. It starts November 20th, when I think season four starts. And until then, I'm just going to be looking and observing and trying to get everything that I can down to do a show in here. It's really exciting.
Sick. Okay, so I'm actually really glad you're in here because we have a listener question that relates to technology.
Ooh.
So I want to let you weigh in on that. Dear Into the Dark, what role can technology play in spellcraft? I'm really glad this was asked because a lot of people think of witchcraft as being an old tradition, which it is. And, you know, a lot of the things that people use haven't changed for hundreds of years, crystals, star charts, etc. But that doesn't mean that there isn't a place for witches and witchcraft in what I like to think of as
the world of tomorrow.
There are many ways in which a witch can avail themselves to the conveniences of modern technology and modern life. So there are a lot of things you can do that just make your life easier. There are star chart apps on your phone to know when you're doing astrology or to use when you're trying to evoke a certain deity. You can get tarot decks and I Ching on the internet. You can also do Wikimancy, which is a form of divination I like, where you ask a question and you hit random article on Wikipedia and you find your answer and what has appeared on that article, what's been directed to you by cyber spirits. There's also monitor scrying, sort of like using a black mirror like maybe Nostradamus might have done. You turn your monitor off, you cleanse the space with white light, and then you light two candles and you stare into the screen and try to find your answer by walking into the spirit world that way. There's also a number of people who are using technology to join people together. For example, Veronica Barlow, who was on our Sex Magic episode, does a broadcast ritual every week. So people all over the world can join in and lend their power to that ritual. And you can find that at dangerjame.com. And I'm going really fast because we don't have a lot of time because this interview is so long and so jam-packed. But before I get to anything else, I just want to say, there are also people who are pushing the boundaries of what you can do with modern technology. Joshua Madara is a cyber wizard. I'm going to link to his blog. He's fantastic. And he's been exploring the possibilities of making robot familiars. So familiars like the animals and spirit guides that would accompany witches and give them information. He's making robot forms of that, or trying to. And he's also making 3D sigils. Sigils being symbols with magical efficacy. Normally they're 2D, but if you can make one 3D using a computer, then who knows what the possibilities are of that for more complex sigils you can put anywhere, if you can copy and paste them anywhere you want to. It's all really exciting. And if any of you have any questions about that, you should email us at intothedarkrfb@gmail.com, because you are listening to Into the Dark on Radio Free Brooklyn. And you should always send your answers, your questions to us, for us to answer. Speaking of which, Eric.
Cooper.
Witchcraft and computers, your
Didn't
thoughts.
Arthur C. Clarke, brilliant futurist, say, I don't remember, something about any civilization with technology sufficiently advanced is indistinguishable from magic.
That sounds, yes, technology is magic. I am so glad you said that.
When I drag a file and then I look at my phone and it's there, I mean, that's very magical.
The CD player just did that. I wonder if that's a kind of magic.
Maybe it's cursed.
Don't joke about that, dude.
In web design, we use a lot of hex codes.
Like for sixes. Okay, anyway, we should really just jump to this interview. So I met Karen Crisis. She's a medium. She's a psychic. She talks to the dead. She shapeshifted once, and she met me in Queens, because she was only here for a few days, and that's where I had to go meet her. And so there's a lot of background noise. So just imagine as you listen to this interview that you're actually in a coffee shop in deep, deep Queens. And then you'll better be able to enjoy my conversation with Karen Crisis. I'll see you guys on the other side of it.
Okay, cool. So thanks again for being on the show. Let's start at the very beginning. So you're a medium primarily. When did you start noticing that this ability was there?
Well, I was one of the common people born as a natural medium. So just in my house, there were always spirit people. I remember pre-kindergarten going to visit my uncle and not understanding why everyone was sad. They kept talking about him being dead and a funeral, which I didn't understand because he was in the car with me. So there were times where, you know, spirit people were very fleshed out, almost as it were, visually. And then there were times as I got older that I realized that I was sensing people who were there, but there was a lot of information I could sense. Male, female, their age, are they crabby, territorial, are they friendly? But it was everywhere, whether I went to school or my aunt's house, on the train. So it was something I just kind of dealt with as a kid. Ironically, though, I didn't, I was a very, very much like a quiet, creative person. I didn't have a lot of friends outside my art projects or music projects, which were usually guys. So I didn't have the typical, like, friend who was experimenting with tarot. I didn't really know anything about the world. And sometimes I would heal animals, and I was having all these experiences that people would call supernatural. But for me, it was just a part of daily life. And in fact, I really trusted what I sensed versus what I saw. I trusted what I sensed much more. Because I noticed, especially as a child, that spirit world people, they could try to change their appearance, maybe, if they were ghosts versus like guides or angels. But I could see through that, and it was more honest. There are laws of energies at work there that are harder to break than when you're in the physical world of illusion. So I found that as a child in the physical world, adults would lie. People had bad intentions sometimes, and they would cover it up with body language or clothing. And so I realized at a young age there was a certain amount of illusion to the physical world that I had to work my way through. So it started very practically a day-to-day basis, being able to sense ghosts. I intuitively felt that ghosts, what people call ghosts, were not really necessarily helpful. They didn't necessarily respect your free will. You know, I'm trying to go to bed at night. I don't want a crowd of people in my room. At the same time, I sense other beings that were more formless, which we could call angels or guides, that really supported my creative aspirations. They helped me accomplish things that were beyond my financial level. Like, I really wanted to go to art college in New York City, and I didn't have support of anyone to help me do that. I had an art teacher who died in the middle of helping me with my application, but my parents were kind of like, we can't afford that. Good luck. And so I had these more formless beings who would give me intuition and ideas on where to go and make these things happen. And, you know, I won a scholarship and I was able to go. And that kind of happened with anything in my creative life. I didn't maybe have the money, or I didn't really have the people, and I would sort of ask for help and I would be connected to what I needed to go beyond that limitation.
When you were asking for this sort of help, was there a particular guide or set of guides or angels that you were relying on, or was it just sort of you put out the request and it sort of...
No, there was a team of people around me that I was very familiar with, how they sensed, how they felt. I could tell who was who, but I didn't really have a lot of identifying information about them until I was older. But, you know, in that way, when you're dealing with the spirit world on a less visual, clairvoyant basis, you're dealing with faster-moving information.
Okay.
You know, the physical world, of course, moves slower. So even if you're dealing with clairvoyant image, you're dealing with a slower-moving energy. So I was really, you know, daily training, sensing things. Even now, when I meet people, I feel people before they show up. I feel situations before they happen. So it was very easy for me to sense who was who and who was not who. Although, right before I left for college, I started having really solid type of clairvoyant experiences again. I got taken out on a date, and apparently I was talking to people who weren't there all night. And at the end of the night, my date was like, "What kind of drugs are you on?" It's a little embarrassing, but I can laugh now. And I worked just a part-time job. I had graduated high school early. I was a nerd. About to go to college in New York, and I was working a job like at a little 99 cent store to make extra money. And one night I was vacuuming in the little room, and I turned around and I saw someone standing in the room, and every time I turned around there were more people. And I didn't really know what they wanted. The more physical something was, the less I knew how to interact with it when I was younger. So I literally like ran out of the room and pretended I had an issue so I could hang out with my manager. And after that, the solid-looking spirit people in the room kind of went away. My senses were organizing themselves at a young age, you could say.
And so now you use these abilities to help other people.
Yes, it's kind of a long road getting to that point. Like I mentioned, I didn't really have any friends who called psychic or knew that these were things that other people had.
Yeah.
I tried telling my mother about it a little bit, and my premonitions, for example, and they always kind of scared her, so I said, I'll keep this to myself.
What kinds of premonitions were you having?
Sometimes they were little ones, like our math teacher is going to give us a surprise test tomorrow, but sometimes they were world events premonitions, or I always seemed to know when people were going to die, like friends of my family.
It must be so hard.
You know, it should be scarier, but I guess because it was something that you just know, you don't know how to evaluate it that way when you're younger. You're just... I would ask my mother, like, how is your friend, you know, did she pass yet? And she'd be like, how did you know? She died. Or I would know a friend I haven't talked to in a while was having a problem and was going to die. Or, you know, something that even happens now, people will say, can you please send my friend healing? You know, they really want to try some alternative methods, and I may see that their spirit's ready to go. So it's going to happen. But when I went to 1 year of that art college and left, it just really wasn't for me, and I joined a band and started touring for 13 years. And that's when things kind of exploded much more in terms of premonitions and people seeming to need healing for me that I wasn't prepared for. I didn't really know how to be a healer.
Yeah.
Or people telling me my music was healing. And being able to sense people's emotions and having premonitions. Would there be violence at the show? Is this promoter going to rip us off? Is this guy going to cheat on me? You know, things, all the basic life stuff.
Yeah.
And the business things, which could be very helpful. The band was kind of protected in that way. But I left that band to sort of, you know, I really wanted to know what the universe was trying to tell me about myself. So I did that for like 13 years.
This was Crisis?
Yes.
Okay.
And so after I left the band, I moved up to the Bay Area, and very long story short, I just said, universe, teach me. So I'd walk down the street, and there'd be a book on Gnosticism. And I'd walk down the street, and someone would invite me to a class. And I didn't really have money, so I was mostly limited to finding the free book or finding something online. And not long after that, I found a script for a guided meditation online to meet your spirit guide. And at the time, it just so happened that I'm a nerd, so I had eczema, and I had a problem with my eyes, like, crusting closed. And I was like, I'm in a new town, I don't know any doctors here, I have very little money, I'm going to go to the dermatologist, even though I've had terrible experiences with doctors. I'm going to try it. And the doctor pretty much said, I can't help you, this is too serious of a situation, I don't know what medicine to give you. So I went home, I tried the guided meditation script, I learned what my eczema was trying to tell me as a message about my power or my fear of it. And 4 days later, there was no sign of ever having this. From being able to not open my eyes in the morning to completely being cured, I realized something's happening here. And I told the universe, like, I'd read an article on ayahuasca. Please send me to South America. I want to train with shaman, you know. That didn't happen. But,
not yet.
You know, I something else happened was I had going through this period, you know, I went into a deep depression and I learned how affirmations could use the power of my mind to change my world. I got into healing myself and other people just with the mind. And I had this dream one night. Before the dream, actually, I was going to bed with my cats in this white cone of light. I was meditating a couple hours a day, like trying different things, reclaiming parts of my soul, all these things that people have different names for now. It's just intuitively, you know, creating things with energy and getting results. And I was someone born with a lot of physical ailments, so it was a really big deal to get results from thin air. And this cone of white light started coming towards me. It was very solid in the room, and I closed my eyes, thought maybe I was dreaming, opened and it was coming again. And I had died when I was younger, so I thought maybe death was coming to take me, and I wasn't really ready for it. So instead of thinking, oh, this is cool, let's see what happens, when it got a few inches from my face, I screamed, like, no, I'm not ready.
Yeah.
And it went away. But then I woke up knowing that I needed to learn a particular healing art. So long story short, I delved into that and, you know, got my initiations and started working on people with cancer and miscarriages. And a couple years later, in 2009, I felt like I needed to make an album again. I contacted a friend that I had in Italy and ended up in Tuscany with a guitar player that was supposed to work on the album with me. But instead of working on the album, what ended up happening was, here comes mediumship. The day after I arrived, I was in the bathroom, and this spirit of this woman made herself very clear to me, and I thought, wow, she feels really familiar, but she was giving herself a form. And I tried to change the form, and I couldn't change her form. And she basically told me she was an old Italian witch, and she was there to teach me things. And she began teaching me things for a couple hours a day. I would write them down, and later on find out that they really existed, whether it was something about the chakras or history. And I did that every day for about 6 weeks. And when I came back to America, I thought, maybe she's going to teach me what witchery is from the inside out. I'm going to learn all these spells and rituals. But she pushed me into mediumship, like training as a medium. I didn't even know that was a word.
Yeah.
And I ended up finding myself at a spiritualist place that was licensed with the NSAC. It's like the National Association of Spiritual Churches that's connected with Lilydale. So there was like a minister who was, you know, trained and tested, and I started training in a spirit circle there, and very quickly developed, and he invited me to start doing talks and platform readings and teach. You know, so that's how that began as an organized thing in my life, which kind of cleared away all the ghosts and brought in things like goddesses and cultural teachers from around the world, much to the surprise of my teacher, because spiritualists prefer to demonstrate that life continues on after death of the physical body. So they prefer to work with like relatives and friends and some kind of spirit person you can get information that you could substantiate. Yes, that is my uncle. He was born in 1963 and he loved maps.
But instead you were...
Well, I did all of those things, and people came from the Bay Area to get my readings. They were very clear and precise and evidential. And then here come goddesses telling me things about history, and in particular Italy, and cultural mixing pots going on there, and all sorts of things that I said, well, maybe there's something to it here. They seem to be telling me that goddesses were different people, of course, way back in form. We're all one, right? But I'm an individuated person, you're an individuated person, and goddess teachers from around the world all had different ages and time periods they presented themselves to humanity. And so I started learning all these things from their perspective. And I later went to Italy and realized that all these things are in the books in Italy, but you know, we don't know about that history there. In terms of like things they were telling about the melting pot of cultures and some of the practices of women who were witches there that are misunderstood. And so it was very interesting because in my classes, I was able to teach people things about mediumship in a very down-to-earth way, like I guess you're liking to do in your radio show. And then I was learning things from guides and teachers and spirit people who have big amounts of knowledge about systems and the way things work. And they were teaching me things, partly for myself, but also how to explain them in a more down-to-earth way.
So when you teach people things about being a medium and sort of making that work, Are you helping them to develop abilities that they already have, or do they need to sort of be at a certain level before?
I've done both.
Okay.
Beginner and people already in the middle of it who don't know what to do with it. You know, my purpose is to just help them become more reliant on their own skills, not reliant on me. So I meet people where they are. And that's what the interesting thing is that happens with classes. If I start a beginner's class, I attract people that are all along the same level who can learn together. Or if I intend to do like an intermediate class, there tend to be interesting groups of people who arrive. All people maybe who are dealing with haunted houses and they don't know what to do, or people who all have, you know, relatives passed, or people who are into paganism. So it's always interesting teaching, like, what kind of group comes together.
Yeah.
But yes, everyone has the potential. So there are specific ways you can train. Some people aren't ready for it, and they tend to... I've only had one person leave a class because they just weren't ready, but people usually know they're ready or not.
What would be... For someone who's, like, at the very beginning of that journey...
Beginning of what?
That journey of, like, being able to sort of develop those abilities. What would be a good sort of initial step? What would be, like, an initial exercise, maybe, to sort of...
Well, really, to communicate with the spirit world, you're using your psychic senses. So it's helpful to understand that those are actually locations on your energy body and do some exercises to develop them. For example, on your physical body, you have physical eyes. You can see things within the physical world. When you're dealing with the energy world or the spirit world, you're using your energy eyes or your psychic eyes, or what people call clairvoyance. And that receptor is actually located on, like, if you want to imagine your energy body, like an outer sheath.
Okay.
It's located between your eyes, you know, a place where people call, oh, my third eye is between my eyes. But there's an actual receptor there. So you can practice exercises to see how it feels giving and receiving information. Same thing, you have energy ears that are above your physical ears. Your intuition is located above your brain. Your sense of psychic sensation is near your belly. And there's a wonderful book, which, let's see if I can remember this moment, it's called You Are Psychic. There's a million books called You Are Psychic. But this one I'll have to get you a little bit later. The gentleman who wrote it is an MIT scientist, and he talks a lot about exercises that you can use with each psychic receptor, so you feel and you sense and you experience what it's like getting information. I recommend that as a beginning if someone has no experience, because then you get to realize, oh, I already use that when I journal, or, oh, you know, I use that when I'm planning a painting. Because when you start to communicate with the spirit world, a lot of people have the introductory experiences where, like, a ghost turns off and on the light in their house, or they feel a temperature change against their body. But that is a spirit person stuck in the astral plane who really knows how to manipulate energy. So they're making all the effort. You're not really doing a lot.
Yeah.
You know? So when you actually want to communicate with the spirit world, you have to learn how to say, we're going to meditate at 2 p.m. and we're going to practice getting information and see how it feels. It's always a little bit more difficult to do it that way. So people have expectations that they're going to be able to have, like, a full-on conversation right away. And some people can, but usually you get a symbol or a sign, so you practice asking and receiving. So it helps to kind of understand how you receive information already. Are you a feeler, or do you get visuals, or do you just kind of get a sense and not know where you get it from? You're really intuitive. So it helps to practice that first. But then, if you really do want to train as a medium, I personally recommend finding a spirit circle, if you can, near you. Now, spiritualism is a very old school practice, so a spiritualist church is probably full of a lot of old people who are kind of boring, but, you know, like, really, really old people who hobbling along and are not into progressive change in the world.
They're not very energetic.
Or just aren't into progressive. Like, the place where I trained was in the middle of the Castro, so all lifestyles were accepted, you know, all practices were okay, you know, nothing was... You know, anytime you go to any organization, there can be a specific mindset of, you have to follow what we do. But the spiritualist system is very clean, so you learn how to not only use your psychic senses, you learn the system of universal laws that operate according to all energy, you learn how to be responsible for your own vibration up or down. Why do you need to do that? Because if you want to connect in a really clean way, so you don't have just a bunch of miscellaneous ghosts running around you, you need to have command of your space and change your vibration. I'm not into the free-for-all, like, oh, let's just go out there and learn and, you know, play with what we don't understand. I see a lot of people get into trouble that way. So that would be my recommendation.
Okay. Do you ever employ any physical tools while you're doing this sort of thing?
Yes. In fact, my guides really love the physical tools. I've gone through periods where I don't use any physical tools, and I just rely on the energy, the magic of the mind, you know, go to the root of where everything is. But the wonderful thing about physical tools is that they're a physical representation of energy. So if you're having a day where you just don't feel like you're most powerful, using a physical tool can help you get into the magic, you know, the creative aspect of it. There's also the joy, like my guides have taught me about the importance of like cultural and historical relevance and resonance having to do with those tools. So you take some actions and do some things with that people for thousands of years have done, you know, you can really feel the power of that action with that physical tool. So I do both. I find them both important.
What tools have you used?
I've used a lot of... Do you want to be a little more specific? Because there's quite a lot.
I mean, part of the reason why I'm asking this is that I went to a lot of people and I said, hey, I'm talking to a medium, what questions would you have if you were the one sitting across the table at a coffee shop in Queens? And one of the questions you asked me, like, are you using, say, Ouija boards or things like that? Or...
So regarded to mediumship specifically?
Yeah.
No. Ouija boards, in my experience, that's teaching and from my own personal experience, are a physical tool that, unless you're someone who is... unless you know yourself very well, if you're a really positive person, if you know how to kind of command your space and get a really positive environment going, a Ouija board is something that the spirit world knows how to use much better than you do.
Okay.
And it's mostly people stuck in the astral plane who know how to use that and are attracted to it. And so you're dealing with people who are like, you know, don't necessarily want to move on from their earthly lives. Criminals, manipulators. It's just like your average bag of folks, you know?
Okay.
So it's not really interesting company. So that's how people kind of get into trouble with it a lot. So I find that to be like less interesting company for myself. As a medium, I've practiced using, psychometry is just holding on to, for example, taking everyone's keys or something from their pocketbook or their pocket, having them throw it into a bucket and putting it all up and taking one of those objects and trying to, you know, read the energy of that object or someone else. I don't really use that in mediumship, but it's a way to train your psychic senses to see how accurately you can gain someone's energy from an object that they hold on to a lot. You can do that with the spirit world, like if someone's grandma had like a favorite bracelet and they still have that object, or, you know, a favorite piece of clothing, sure, that holds a certain amount of energy, so you can hold that in your hands and intend to connect with that spirit person through that object. As I said, it's a little bit different for me because I started sensing things beyond the physical when I was very young, but those things can be really helpful. I find that that's a really good thing to do. My more cultural guides, so the guides that are goddesses or witch teachers from specific cultural practices, like me to use things like earth and air and soils and you know, wands and gemstones and herbs and things like that from the natural world to move energy and deeply connect in ritual. For example, I just came back from Italy, like 6 weeks research trip. That was my second time living there among people. And I went to like a 2,000-year-old temple, and I dug my hands in the soil, and I felt the stones there that were, you know, over 2,000 years old. And I took some of those with me. And, you know, I went to places that were old pagan sites that were marked with the charge that no longer exist, and I dug my hands in that soil, and I went to the wells where allegedly old witches washed, and I stuck my hands in the water and let them talk to me through, you know, through scrying with water. And I really experienced things through going to places where people, especially in Italy, where a lot of nature or structures have been unchanged throughout time and untouched by modern society. And go back there and not only feel the spirit people, but touch the things they touched and walk where they walked and feel them share with you through that, or see historical things occurring.
With these research trips you've been doing, because this has been, so one of, like, many you've been doing in Italy recently.
No, this is one of two.
One of two, okay.
Where I went to the land.
Is this mostly you developing your own sort of, you developing your own abilities and your own sort of understanding of all this stuff, or is this also geared towards some sort of LARP, some sort of, I don't want to say end product, because that sounds commercial.
But like, oh, no, I don't know what
like,
you mean.
Like, maybe some sort of, like, wider dissemination of the things you're learning to other people.
Sure, well, when I ended up in Tuscany the first time, that was I thought it was all personal experience, and I was really loving it, and I didn't have any expectations of that so much. But after I came back to the U.S. from that experience, that spirit woman named Aradia had other plans for me. So she was the one who began teaching me, and we work on certain creative projects together, and they were, like, if you look at my painting website, before the time I went to Italy, my paintings are a lot of different styles, and afterwards suddenly there's a consistency. I didn't learn anything new as a painting. I just started working with my spirit guide, and she helped me. But she had a lot of specific things in mind, and learning to be a medium was one. I didn't understand it at first. Like, why am I learning how to, you know, get... It's valuable to get information from people, and it's not just a communication. It's a very emotional experience. As a medium, you get to experience people on the soul level. Like, so who they are beyond their stresses and their particularities, and it's a really beautiful thing. So it can be a very healing thing. But I wondered, why did she put me there, you know? But then it was so that I could understand how to communicate with cultural guides. And so then when the goddesses came in, for example, then she started teaching me, and they started bringing me a lot of historical information. And then I started realizing, like, oh, this is a personally fascinating for me, but I saw a pattern. And the pattern was that they kept taking me back to the folklore about witches and all the evil stories and the fears and the superstitions. And they showed me that these women were actually healers. And I thought, okay, well, maybe this is what she... They were really impressing upon me that they wanted me to, one, learn about the spirit people from whom the knowledge was passed down. Just like in South America, you heard, you know, Graham Hancock writes about the winged creature coming out of the sky and right. teaching them how to, you know, change toxic tubers into edible zucchinis. Same thing from the sea. So they wanted me to learn about, you know, these kind of helpers and teachers, and then they wanted me to learn about who the women really were. So it started developing from a personal passion to, like, I guess I'm a researcher now. I'm not really a researcher, but I guess I am. So they would show me visions and take over my computer. A website would pop up. They really use my electronics to take me places. And then later on, I find that these visions or things they told me or these things that pop up, sometimes I'll type a word on my computer screen, there's evidence of it existing in Italy. And the reason that started happening in 2015, my husband, who's from Italy, he went to visit his mother, and they did a trip for me. She's from Caserta in the south, and her mother is a Nona healer. She heals by singing a song from the spirit world. And so there's a female lineage there of Strega. And he went with his cousin to Benevento, which is the city of witches in the south, which has an interesting story behind it. And he picked out two books for me by different Italian authors, brought those books back to me, and we started translating them together. And lo and behold, here was all this information that I'd been seeing in my visions, that they'd been telling me as part of Italy's history and culture. And then all my guides started really pressing upon me to reach out, like, reach out to this author, reach out. You have to go back to the land, you know, and you have to go in that land to understand it. And that's sort of how this most recent trip happened, where I interviewed, like, 23 different people, from museum directors on the Grande Madre to the Association of Authors in the South who work on recovering Inquisition papers, to healer women in the mountains, herbalists on the top of the mountains, you know, people from different secret paths of magic and ecstatic trance, and young witches and old witches, and all sorts of different people.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yes, spectacular.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Out of curiosity, those two books, what were they, and also those translations, are they... Can they be found by other people?
I will give you the names of the books, because they're in Italian, and so I'll write it down for you. And one of the books is by a man who was one of my guides when I was down there. He's become a friend of mine, Carlo Napolitano. He has authorized me to be able to teach a class on his book, which okay. is a very interesting one, along with giving the English translation that I did. So I'll give you, you know, my website and make that available, and it's not expensive at all, but some of the money goes to help him with his book.
Sure.
But that's an interesting book because it talks about all the cultural heritage, and it has some of the original invocations that the NR used in the South. So it's chock full of really interesting information. I'm about to launch that, so I'm glad you're interested.
I'm super interested, and I'm sure all the people listening to this are going to be super interested mm-hmm. too.
In addition to that, I'm going back to Italy as soon as possible, but I'm trying to compile all my information into a book. That's partly why I'm doing the lectures, to kind of wet the whistle and let people know, and to help me get organized. It's a lot of information. I also did, like, video interviews, and, you know, I want to be able to help take people back there and do mini tours for people who are interested.
That's a good answer. Okay, so you mentioned the Nona tradition. I'm not personally terribly familiar with that, which is part of why I'm doing this show, because I'm just not familiar with a lot of things. But could you, so there's a healing song that's sung from the...
Well, it's. I brought a little map for you.
You brought a map? Oh my gosh!
I brought a little. It's a very handmade map, but just to help you understand, Italian witchery, and what I talk about in my book and my lecture, is it's an indigenous practice. So there was actually a historical period in time where this came about. Like I mentioned earlier, in South America, Graham Hancock talks about these, you know, teachers from the sea and the sky coming and helping these ancient cultures do these really advanced things. So in Italy, after our Neolithic and Paleolithic, and I don't have the dates with me, but there was a big change in the country, which is that they were invaded by Mongols. And prior to that, even though Italy was not united, the families were matrilinear. So the woman was the head of the household, kind of like the Seminole Indians. Right? She was head of the tribe and had a great importance in the family and taking care of the life of the family. And after this patriarchal culture invaded, the woman didn't like necessarily lose all her power. Even now, you go to Italy and they tell you, despite what you see politically, we're a matrilinear culture within families. But in Italy, in that time period, there was a change. And not only the family structure, but women were cut off from their communities. So women had been, since ancient times, meeting with other women to figure out how to take care of newborn babies and what plants to use to heal, etc. So when they got cut off from their communities, we have this influx of goddesses coming in. So there was like a lineage of them. In my little map for you, I wrote like Inanna, Cibele, Iside, Diana, Aradia. So if we want to look at them as from olden times getting to newer, that's just a few of them, we could say. So they started helping people, and of course their information and help over time changed. But in the earlier days, we were dealing with families and no doctors. So we had what you could call the Nonna healer. Every family, everyone you talk to in Italy says, oh, that's my grandma. They don't even consider that witchery. Their grandma, if she got her marks from her grandma or the great-grandmother, at around the age of 15 or 16, received a transmission of energy through her hands, kind of like Reiki or a lot of other energy practices, which opened up her abilities to become a healer and a diviner. Healing did require some training. It was used like fingertips and massage with oil into bones and muscles to deal with like broken bones and muscle issues. And they dealt with also illnesses that were, they considered to be from the evil eye, you know, bad intentions from someone else. And they would release that by putting oil and water and trying to discern the situation and clearing the body of this energy with also a physical tool. And I experienced that when I was in Italy. So a lot of people think they can read the book and they can take a plate of oil and put 7 drops of oil in there and tell if there's a spell on them. But there's an energy at work here. These women from the Nonna lineage, you know, it's passed down from people in the family who it should be passed down to. Not everyone is a part of a lineage in a family. It skips generations.
Okay.
But this big divine feminine spirit is working behind them. So, as I had in my lecture, in the video, you can see this Nonna was, she saw that I had a very, very old spell put on me by a couple of men. And I said, well, I believe that it's from a past life because I believe I was burned in the fire.
So that was, wow.
And she confirmed that. She said, oh yeah. But so she does this thing with oil and the water, and she does it a few times to help discern where the old spell came from, the bad intention, and to release it. And I felt this intense energy. But then I felt this incredible energy like lift off my body. Like layers and layers and layers. But then, back to my little map I've been talking a lot, was that, you know, as times change, like in the north when the Inquisition came around, families were split up. Young women who weren't married were kicked out. They had to go live under the walnut and oak trees, which is where some of the legends started. So what you have is psychic medium women with healing abilities or abilities to heal with the herbs around them, no longer in a family structure. So they're available to help each other or the community, which is where we get into things like the strega, like the community witch. And then as time passed even more, a lot of women were outcasts in Italy during the Inquisition, and some of them found their way down to Benevento, the city of witches in the south. The reason it's called City of Witches in the South was not because they all lived there. Women flocked there as a safe haven. There was a little political adventure that happened, which was that one of the bishops that tried to take over in Benevento to kind of come in and lay down the Inquisition law and start putting people to trial. The current one said, no, unless you pay me a lot of money, you're not coming in. And Southern family structure was a lot different. It was very insular, you know, like if the head of the family died, it was male. The property stayed within the family, and then they didn't necessarily like just kick out the unmarried man or woman in the family. They sent them to the church. So almost every family had like a priest in training or a nun. So when the Inquisition tried to come along and say like, "Oh, your sister's a witch," they're like, "What do you mean? She's a nun." It just didn't stick. So this bishop kind of stood up for his own territory, and the other one said, "Well, I'm banning you. You know, I'm banning the city of Benevento." But then there was a Norman invasion threat, and so they came back and said, "Will you please support us?" And so I'll lift the ban, and so the ban was lifted. So all the women found out that this was a safe place to go, and so you have all these outcasts converging in Benevento. And you have women called the Yanara, who are women as outcasts. They get help from the spirit world, and they carry on some of the general witchy practices of curing with herbs and healing disease, but also carrying on the feminine mystery tradition. So how to be autonomous as a woman, strictly feminist type of work from the spirit world, how to take care of themselves as outcasts. And then, of course, we move into modern times to pagan structure, which has nothing to do with Italian witchery, which is the coven and the high priestess and priest. A lot of people think that's witchery, but it has absolutely nothing to do with Italian witchcraft. There's no traces of it. But that's modern culture responding to needs, you know, and embracing outside ideas.
Thank you so much for that rundown.
Sure. It's my little handmade diagram.
That was super helpful. Oh, wow. Okay. You've been doing a lot of healing with... Like, do you primarily use energy, or do you use...
I was trained as a Reiki master teacher, so, you know, energy. But I work with guides, too. So I like to, you know, work with the guides and then the energy. It also takes me out of the process more psychically, and I let the guides do the work.
Is it... When you do it more yourself, is that more sort of a draining experience for you? Like, do you have to, like, sort of, like, do, like, one... Like, heal one person, maybe, and then, like, take a day of rest or something?
It's definitely not draining. If you're healing and being drained, then you're using your own energy and you're doing it wrong.
Okay.
Healing is where you have... healing as a Reiki healer or as a medium. I can't talk for everything else. You have energy coming from another source through you. You're just the channel.
Okay.
So it's always very exciting and energizing. Do you have anyone interested in, since you were saying that people are interested in mediumship, the different types of mediums? Because there are different types of mediums.
I didn't even know there were types. Okay, this is perfect. Thank you so much. Please, tell me about the different types of mediums.
Well, people have asked me before, and it's true, they're... you'll find, like, as you begin to train as a medium, meaning training in a circle and practice giving readings to people and then kind of doing, like, platform readings. Platform readings are cold readings you do in front of a group. So, like, at spiritualist communities or with a group of friends, you kind of stand up in a room of people you don't know.
Okay.
And you kind of pay attention to who is there spirit-wise, and you give a you ask for permission to give a message to the flesh and blood person. It's a great way to train yourself, you know, to do that. It's also a great way to, like, move into trust, you know, like, as a medium, instead of, you know, having... Nobody always has the luxury of meditating for an hour and getting ready ahead of time, which you can do. Sometimes, you know, having a close relationship with your guides and be able to jump in the moment. But there are some mediums after training that end up doing just readings for, like, past earthly people, like passed on grandmas and friends and relatives. And those are a lot of the types of mediums you see on TV or...
I think a lot of people, their first experience or encounter, just even the concept of medium, is through... A lot of, like, I think there were a lot of television programs, especially, like, around the turn of the century just now. Like, I guess, well, Jonathan Edwards was one of the folks doing that. How do you feel about that sort of, because I think a lot of people sort of, I think, had a knee-jerk skepticism to mediumship because of people like, say, Jonathan Edwards, who I think has explicitly stated that he wasn't actually doing medium work, he was just pretending to, essentially. Maybe he hasn't. I might be misremembering this.
Sure. I'm not familiar with that, but I will say I think skepticism is very important and healthy.
Okay.
Skepticism, not necessarily if you're, you know, going to be the most negative person in the world, but for example, all along my life and even spiritual training, like even when I was training at the center, I had a healthy dose of skepticism. And I think that if you're really trying to expand yourself as a person and you're really interested and passionate about learning, it's great to have skepticism because that gives, especially if you're working with the spirit world, a chance to... surprise you. You know, I went into situations thinking like, well, when I had my, I tried a past life regression with someone that I trained with, and I thought, I've done a lot, like, with meditation on my own, with guided visual. I really didn't know if I believed in past life. It's maybe weird to say as a medium that I didn't know if I believed in that, but
sure.
I was skeptical. I was skeptical how the experience would be, so I decided, well, I should try one. And I did, and I experienced, I experienced my past lives. It blew me away, and now I realize, okay, I really am not a skeptic anymore. I was skeptical with mediumship, too. I was skeptical with, even once in a while, I have my doubts, like, am I going to be able to help someone or not, you know? And then you have a most incredible reading. I mean, I was skeptical about things like shape-shifting until it happened to me and other people observed it. So, you know.
Go into that. Wait, so, like, you'd mentioned, like, the idea of, like, changing forms with, like, sort of spiritual beings, but that makes, I mean, they're not flesh and blood, so it's like it makes a lot of sense. This is a bigger jump. Wait, tell me about this.
Shapeshifting is a little bit difficult to talk about, but I'll just finish my thought on mediums.
Oh, please, sorry.
I think it's okay. I just think it's very important to be skeptical. That's why I feel like it's important, if you're interested in this stuff, to learn how to be aware of your own psychic abilities, like how you get information, because really you're designed to receive information in the physical world and the unseen world. So who better than you to be a judge of what's happening around you? And, I feel like if you're in tune with who you are and how you work, then you have all the tools you need to go forth into something. And, you know, I didn't really know how I felt about getting readings from other people either. For example, I mentioned this to you, that my main spirit guide's name is Aradia. And people have written books about her. And she told me, oh, don't pay attention to the books. You know, they're not really that right. But focus on what you're learning through me and don't worry about that. What I found interesting was when I got readings from other people, they would see her appearing the same way I would see her appearing. They would be able to tell where she was from or what her body of knowledge or her purpose was. She showed them memories of mine from childhood to show me, like, I've been watching you since you were very little, and, you know, moments where no one else was around you. So I think it's very important to be skeptical, because just because someone says they're something doesn't mean they are. And we know that in daily life, you know, but that applies to everything. Back to things like shape-shifting and types of mediums, I guess I'll rewind a little bit. There are mediums, you know, who deal with just flesh and blood people. I've watched some mediums on TV, and I've seen some people that I think I really feel are real. I understand the techniques they're using, but then I see some who I'm sure are real too, but maybe that night they were just kind of, they were moving way too fast, and they really scared off their audience. Like, I can't remember the name of this particular woman who's really funny. I think she's from Long Island. She has big hair. I don't remember, maybe it's Long Island medium or something, but I saw a video clip of her in an audience, like a TV audience, and she was walking around the room doing a technique that some mediums do. It's also a specific thing, not all mediums do this, where they go in a room of people, and they start sensing spirit people, and they start asking who that person belongs to. Like, I'm sensing an old lady with a diamond ring, and she says her favorite accessory was red glasses, and she died of cancer. Does that belong to anyone, you know? So she was doing that kind of reading, which I don't do. And she was so hyper, because the energy does raise your energy level very, very fast. But she would start and then run before she was finished to someone else and run to someone else. And for me, she looked like someone who was, like, a little bit crazy. And I understood that energetically she was moving very fast, but you could see people in the audience a little bit like, is this woman crazy or is this real? And people weren't really able to connect.
Yeah.
So I understand that aspect too. There are some mediums who just end up working with, like, guides and cultural teachers, which seems to be, I'm not solely working there, but there are mediums who deal with things, like, even bigger than what we can talk about. Like, I met with a secret group called the Benandanti, and they work with form that is much more formless than we're used to. So if I were to try to explain to you that they deal with the balance of light and dark, positive and negative, to work to keep that balance, people know there's all sorts of folk stories and legends about that, and they're not going to really understand what that means, even if I were to try to explain it. And they're happy with, you know, being misunderstood, because their work is more serious and it's bigger picture than what you and I are talking about now. And then there are mediums in between. There are some mediums who go to houses and locations and try to find out who's there and help that spirit cross over. For a lot of mediums in general, that's like basic training. There are mediums who deal with the darker stuff, like spirit attachments and territory battles. And that's some of the work that I've ended up doing, which is kind of, you know, it's work that I don't really tell a lot of people about to sort of protect them.
Okay. just briefly, though, when you say territorial battles, what do you mean exactly?
So, for example, I mentioned before that, like, ghosts are the type of spirit people who are stuck in the astral realm. Like, if you're a spirit person who started your death transition, you know, but you didn't finish it because either you are not ready to accept your death, or you killed yourself and you're hanging around out of guilt, or you really liked being able to stay in your home and you don't want to let it go, or you're like a manipulator and you get off on bullying other people. These are the kind of people you find who are in between having passed out of their body and going to the light and having their life review and moving on with their death transition, we could call it. So that's the realm of people there. What you find in that realm is that there are people who like to plug in to people who they can on the planet. It's not as scary as it sounds. For example, we've all had a friend who was like maybe trying to push us to do things. Like yeah. You talk, you know, everyone's got a story like, when I was young, I had a friend who tried, you know, pushed me to try to steal a candy, a lollipop,
right.
You know, and he didn't force me, but I gave in to the influence.
Yeah.
Or I have a friend who's really a complainer, and so I end up, you know, giving her money and buying her dinners, even though I can't really afford it. I just feel bad for her, and I'm always feeling bad for, you know, so we have people who influence us. And it's the same thing in the spirit world. Like, you can see it most dramatically, for example, in San Francisco, where you have crackheads living out on the street, or, you know, street people who are kind of drugged out of their mind, who are not fully inhabiting their body with their energy. You can see that they're kind of jerky and they're not really speaking coherently, and maybe you walk by and they suddenly say something very personal about you.
Yeah.
That's like a person who has a spirit person attached to them. People like to call it possession, but possession is never really full.
Okay.
Or you wouldn't be alive. You know, it doesn't possession doesn't really work the way people think it does. But you can be influenced, and a spirit person can kind of plug into you. And so some spirit people deal with that a lot, whether it's just seeing and being aware of them. So territory battles.
Yeah.
Did you want me to do that, or we need to go?
Well, that wasn't territory battle.
So territory battle is a little bit different. For example, since we talked about spirit people in the astral realm, you know, being people who don't want to kind of leave because they like their house or whatever, you run into people who want to stay in a place. Or, for example, I was part of this spiritual community, and the minister we had left and other people came in to try to sort of take over the board, and they were practicing something that was a little bit messier, shall we say. So they were practicing, which they weren't supposed to, on a weekly basis. So their spirit people were getting used to hanging out in that room. And there were already other guides there that were part of the spiritualist system. So what happens is, when you have people with ego issues and maybe they're not keeping really great spirit company, just like we all have friends, you know people who have maybe not the best kind of friends, they want to come in and maybe take over that space. In fact, the very flesh and blood people really wanted to take over that space. And so what ends up happening is that there's like a little bit of a wobble in the clean vibration of the space, and there are spirit people who want to sort of kick out the people who would not be okay with that vibration changing. So it's a little bit hard to explain, but as a medium, I see that go on. I see the other spirit people coming in there and trying to take up place. I see them trying to make other people scared or push the ego buttons of other people, and I see people responding to that. And so I have to try to help bring the balance back, and if not, you know, I get out of town. It's a little bit complicated to talk about, and when those things are happening, I kind of keep it a little more secret, because there is positive and negative energy in the world, whether you want to believe it or not. I was also skeptical about that too. That's an example of a territory battle, where people around you maybe getting their buttons pushed and not necessarily know why, and if they're prone to egotism, if they're prone to pessimism, if they're prone to proudness, in that moment where things are changing hands and spirit people are there influencing the situation, they may act on that behavior to change the very earthly dynamic, like to change the goals of an organization to be something less than what it was. So that's some of the work I ended up finding myself doing, is trying to keep a balance when those things happen. It's not fun.
Right. I mean, it's like, I suppose it's one of those situations where if you see a thing that is broken, it's very hard to not at least try to fix the thing.
It's not even a matter of like, oh, it's my job to fix it. It's my job to like bring out in the open that it's happening, and then, you know, try to find a compromise with the earthly people involved. And if the earthly people involved are not willing to deal with that, it becomes very clear very easily. And in that environment, if I were to stay, the spirit people really up the ante on influencing that environment to get to me, to try to intimidate me, because I can see what's happening and the other people can't necessarily see it. So there are some mediums that find themselves seeing a lot of things that a lot of other people don't see, that you can't always talk about. because it's like sort of, like I said, territorial issues that not everyone wants to admit to or engage in.
So I think we've been doing this for quite some time, but before we say goodbye, shapeshift, just because that really, that sounds awesome.
Yeah,
it might not be, and I accept that.
But. Sure, I never really believed in that, and a lot of the old legends you read about, you know, witches shapeshifting, I don't really think that was necessarily occurring in the way it was written. I think that a lot of the idea of the witches riding away on brooms to battles or to Sabbaths was really astral travel. From what I found out, astral travel does happen in groups. I know people who have done it and who have seen things that I could substantiate for them that do this dreaming in groups, if you want to say, travel in the astral plane together to do things. They see the same things, they report those things to me. It can be evidential and substantiated. But it is technically shape-shifting and being in the astral plane at the same time. It's just not something that is really technically possible.
Okay.
For example, like also in the south of Italy, the Yanara had this very bad reputation of being these witches who would change form and go around invading people's houses at night to scare them. But then they would show up looking like a woman and then they would change back to another form. It's just technically almost impossible for one form of consciousness to change form to something else and then show up in the astral plane where everyone in the house is also psychically advanced enough to see this happening to their naked eye, and then this person changing back. It's just, without going into another long speech, technically it's impossible.
Sure.
But when I experienced shape-shifting, without going into too many details because it was quite personal, I was with someone else and suddenly I felt myself change into a different form, and I felt myself expressing that form physically and verbally, if you want to say. And I felt everything about myself change, and I was able to observe being this other form through the emotions, through the mental nature, through the sounds I was making, through my physical posture. Everything changed, kind of like you would imagine it would if you were to change into another animal, for example. And it happened twice, and the other person felt the exact same thing happened, my shape, my sounds. And, you know, I tried to even make the sounds when it was done, and I wasn't able to do it again. So it was something that happened to me versus something that I was able to make happen.
Right. So it just sort of, it just came out of nowhere.
Yeah. It was really incredible. But I thought it was pretty fantastic. But I thought it, you know, I really didn't believe in that before it happened.
Thank you to Karen Crisis for appearing on our program and sharing her experiences and her abilities and her thoughts. And she wanted everybody to check out a number of books, or she mentioned some that she thought were very good. So if you're interested in the things she's been talking about, you should check out You Are Psychic by Peter A. Sanders Jr., Opening to Channel by Sonia Roman and Dwayne Parker, Il Triangolo Stregato, Il Misterio de Noche de Benevento by Carlo Napolitano, and La Strega de Benevento by Fabio Garrudi. All right, so this is our last show before Halloween, so I want to wish everybody a happy Halloween, a wonderful Samhain, a great Hop Tuna, a fantastic Calen Gaeaf, and a great Dia de Muertos. You know, Halloween's my favorite holiday. Eric, how do you feel about Halloween? I say Halloween. Do you know what you're going to be for Halloween, Eric?
Probably a combination of the three sitcom characters. George Costanza, Michael Scott, and Billy Bob.
Like as a three-headed monster? Or like how are you going to do that?
Some kind of like mixing bowl thing. Mix of things. I don't know.
So. Sounds cool.
Yeah, didn't you see Willy Wonka's sitcom from the
70s? I missed it, but that's only because the 70s are still a mystery to me to this day. So when can people catch your show when it's on?
It starts in 6 weeks, so don't hold your breath right now. November 20th, pull request at 1 p.m. on Sundays right here on Radio Free Brooklyn.
I love your radio voice.
Why, thank you. I've been working on it.
It's like kind of 1920s and like a sort of like, and here we have Jackie Robinson.
Oh,
Winning goal for the American boys. Fantastic. Okay. Thanks for being on, because you really helped when that technical what's it went wrong. You were like, it's almost like it was meant to be, Eric. Was meant to be. Okay, so thanks everybody for listening. I hope you have a sick, sick Halloween, Misfits Forever, and stay tuned for Why Do We Only Listen to Dead People?